we are dealing with the some of the annual report of members have it, and then I'm told that in the back that you all have received is a copy of their presentation, so we'll use that as a basis for our hearing. They have also helpfully included for our information a report of their comments at the meeting with the President. And then they also attended the budget forum to look at the state of municipal finances. So those are resource documents that have been included in your bag. Thank you very much for the bag. Nice, convenient, and handy. There they are. The important thing are they are right in front of you. You've got them. This publication, yeah. Yeah, you have those. That's what is important. Any other thing else, don't worry. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Welcome, Tati Masondo, and your team from SALGA. We're now ready to hear from you. The machine will catch us as it proceeds. Please, we can now start.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, Chief Sergeant Sinodi, members of Parliament, the SALGA delegation, officials present. We come to this portfolio committee that deals among other issues of local governance to present to you, as the chairperson has already indicated, the SALGA annual report for the financial year 2008-2009. And we're looking forward to, of course, issues being raised that require further engagement and debate. And we hope that as we leave this meeting place, we will emerge better persons because we shall have learned so much from yourself. So without any waste of time, Chairperson, I'll hand over to Paul George, who's the CEO of SALGA, who will then take us through the presentation. In the SALGA delegation, that's important to mention that very briefly. I'm accompanied, my name is Amos Sondo, the chairperson of SALGA, but in the delegation, I'm accompanied by Chike Sophie, who is the deputy chairperson. And by CEO of SALGA, George, who's on my extreme right. We also have a delegation of SALGA from KwaZulu-Natal. Included in our delegation is its councillors as well as the officials. I'm sure if necessary, they can introduce themselves very briefly. If you
from KZN, I'm Councillor Patrick Koza from SALGA KZN, Bonalonga.
Nolo Bushusha, KZN, Bonalonga.
Chairperson Solena from the Breakaway Group, from the CIA for Solomon, to the Canada from the United
States. Domen is telling that he's read your report. Yeah. You'll get a report about that later. The delegation is from. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. And thank you for the opportunity for SALGA to make this presentation today as a statement of accountability for the work that it has been mandated to undertake. Last year... Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson. The official, I think there's something wrong with it. It's terrible. Yeah, so the officials, Chairperson, that are with us today, on my right, I have the CFO of SALGA, Ms. Josephine Meyer, and right behind me is Mr. Johan Mettler, is the Executive Director for Governance and Intergovernmental Relations at SALGA. He's part of the new people who have joined SALGA recently. And on my far extreme left at the back is Mr. Lance Jewell. He's the Chief of Operations at SALGA. And behind Lance is Mr. Mabika, and he's the Finance Manager at SALGA in KZN.
I'm not sure if I'm missing any other questions.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The report, as I indicated, covers the period 08-09, and when we appeared to this committee last year, we did indicate that since 2007, April, SALGA has started a very thorough fundamental restructuring of its own programs as led by the strategy that the National Executive Committee approved in 2007 to improve the organization and make sure that it is indeed responsive to its members. So we say we have started a journey, and we think that a big step has been undertaken. The report will also cover, Chairperson, the annual financial performance of the organization for the 2008-2009 financial year. And lastly, we will also take the opportunity to outline to the Portfolio Committee some of the key policy developments that have shaped local government and to a larger extent driven by national government and have an impact right across the three spheres of government. So we will highlight some of the work that SALGA has done in relation to those policy matters. I think we have moved quite a lot, Chairperson, in terms of the challenges that are faced by municipalities, and we continue to improve ourselves as organized local government to carry out the mandate entrusted on us on promoting and representing the interests of municipalities. I will cover the role and mandate as well as governance structures of SALGA in brief, just to highlight probably for the benefit of a few members who might be new in this particular committee. In terms of the core mandate of SALGA, we have a representative role that we play and is guided by SALGA Constitution, that of being an employer and also a representative body in local government, an employer being playing an employer role on collective bargaining matters affecting the sphere of local government, and also playing an advisory role as well as a representative role. For the last 5 years, we have a 5-year strategic plan that the National Executive Committee presented to the highest decision-making body of SALGA, the National Members Assembly, and approved it to guide the work of SALGA. And broadly, it seeks to focus on areas of improvement in municipalities, be it financial viability, governance structures and systems in municipalities, service delivery, improvement and deepening local democracy and accountability, and the ongoing municipal institutional development and new areas of profiling and improving local government. Indeed, we remain on course on the improvement, on looking at our overarching imperatives as to create and sustain municipal capacity to drive socio-economic transformation and deliver on the expectation of communities. As we present this report, Chairperson, there is quite a lot of challenges that the sphere of local government has gone through and continues to go through in terms of community protests and a whole range of areas that continues to present challenges for local government to continue improving. Around the governance structures, we have the National Conference being the highest decision-making body, National Members Assembly, and in between the National Executive Committee being the day-to-day executive body that leads and gives strategic direction to the work of the organization. It has got working groups that develop and refine policy proposals for approval by members. Same mirror at provincial level in terms of the highest decision-making bodies, how they meet, and so on. Working groups have been structured around six focus areas: economic development, municipal finance, social development, municipal service and infrastructure, human resource development, and governance, and IGR. In terms of the five-year strategic path we presented to the committee last year, we did indicate that we are an organization that is undergoing profound institutional change, and our focus is more on improving a whole range of areas, one of those being the areas of improvement on corporate governance issues that have constantly been a challenge to the organization to make sure that it's able to focus. So we have a five-year plan, and we are now implementing the third year of that five-year plan, and everything remains on course in terms of overhauling the overall institutional direction of SALG. As we continue to implement this agenda, the Planning Commission is the new area that has now been outlined in terms of the medium-term strategic framework outlined by the current term of government, 2009-2014 national and provincial, and SALGA, we will be grappling with ensuring that the work of local government is refined and properly accommodated in the work of the Planning Commission to refine IDPs to reflect the new priorities. As we play our role in terms of our work, we seek to consolidate the agenda of improvement, and five key areas that we presented to the committee last financial year, we shall be reporting on the improvement around those areas. But in short, Chairperson, we have undergone profound institutional change, and we are fairly confident that we are on course to attain the areas that continue to improve us. We are fairly confident that as we go to 2009-2010, we will be able to play a much more significant role on areas that will be having an impact on the role of the sphere of local government. This particular slide, Chairperson, sums up what could have been a 20-slide barometer of how over the last 2 years SALGA has improved. You will see that in the very last deep red area, it's where we are coming from as an organization, much more on my right in the 2006-2007. We had to implement measures to make sure that we secure the present by ensuring that the relevance of SALGA to its members and also as a key IGR player is restored. We had suffered quite a lot of these areas that are highlighted there: ineffectual internal control, ineffectual monitoring evaluation, skills and capacity constraints, a lack of budgeting, planning and forecasting, lack of strategic alignment. I think the committee quite a lot and SCOPA raised all of these issues, a lack of sustainability, in issues of fraud and maladministration, and control of assets. We have now moved in 2007 to an area where we have established as an organization and improving our performance, and we're fairly on course to improve. So if you ask where we are, Chairperson, in terms of the stress pendulum, we have moved from where we have been on the danger zone. We established the organization in 2007, 2008, and as we report, we are fast approaching the advanced phase in the organization where we have reshaped ourselves to focus more on being a leading organization around the issues of our members.
And before you proceed, just go back to this slide. You see graphically those two arrows, you should have their replica facing downwards.
Okay.
The red one, yes, you have a green arrow, that arrow facing downwards.
Okay. Like this and that.
And the green one, you have a red one facing downwards.
Okay.
Then you will be representing a pendulum property.
Okay.
A pendulum does not go permanently up.
It swings up and down.
Yes.
Okay. Now,
we just change your
we just wanted to create a balance change.
Yes. I realize it's not yours. It's not originally yours. Anderson Young. But
okay.
Okay.
Thanks, yeah. So, in short, we have moved to the zone where we are fairly confident that the future holds fairly positive in terms of our focus. We have established ourselves quite strongly across all focus areas that our members have raised that we need to strengthen ourselves. And all areas of systems and resource improvements, we are glad to report that in the current year, 08-09, all of these areas of systems and resources are now in place and have been fully implemented. The Auditor General has also acknowledged this in terms of highlighting in the report of AG that SALGA indeed has improved in all of those areas that were problematic. We have established all areas of focus, and including business process systems. And as we sought to create a one organization, we have now outlined specific focus areas for the SALGA national office as well as SALGA provincial areas by creating a clear alignment of responsibilities and clear execution priorities at each of the two areas. We have also implemented areas that have been raised quite consistently in the past, and also in the last report, 07-08. We are glad, Chairperson, that now we have been found to have fully complied with all of those areas by the auditor. So in short, the base for the organization has been fundamentally overhauled, and the base has begun to show positive results. We can now improve on implementing our core mandate. Under the employer role in 08-09, Chairperson, in short, we have concluded a comprehensive collective bargaining strategy that will guide the work of the employer and how to handle labor relations going forward. Some of the challenges that we have had over the last 3 years, we are fairly confident that guided by this new approach, we will be able to navigate some of the complexities that collective bargaining continues to throw. We have done evaluation of all bargaining structures at a provincial level, local labor forums, provincial labor forums, national bargaining structures, and we have sought to strengthen all of these areas. Develop the HR handbook to facilitate greater compliance to workplace legislation. So as we signed new agreements, we have also realized that municipalities continue to struggle on having a clear guidance on how to manage labor relations, how to manage human resource policies. So SALGA has now developed a full HR handbook, workshopped all municipalities and provinces, and also circulated all of those handbooks as a handy guide to managers in municipalities to manage all these issues. We have also, out of 1,432 Section 57 managers, conducted assessment of generic competency in almost 210 municipalities during the year under review. And employees below Section 57 in 23 municipalities we have also managed to conclude during the year under review. Our position on the single public service as concluded continues to be a guiding force as we grapple with this major overhaul of the public service. Under the employer role, HR forums, which have proved to be very problematic in the past, as a result of major problems on conciliation, mediation, and so on. We have now launched these forums in provinces, except in Free State. We had particular challenge at that time, but we remain confident that during this year, 09-10, we'll conclude those. Job evaluation guidelines for municipalities have been done, and 431 arbitration cases were received, and SALGA assisted across in each province in ensuring settlement of those. Even though the settlement levels look very far, some of the legal complexities continue to define how these matters are being handled, and conciliations have also been dealt with as the details that are outlined in the slide. under capacity building programs, Chairperson, 400 councillors out of 471 that were registered for 208 have graduated under the program. And these programs are run with the University of Pretoria. They are run with the Nelson Mandela University. They are also run here in the Western Cape. And there is more registration that has taken place during the current financial year 09-10. And some councillors have also undertaken executive leadership programs higher than undergraduate levels. Others have done up to two level seven, which is master's degree level, and we continue to be encouraged about the self-development of councillors. And also around the training of councillors overall, 8,794 have been trained, and this is a partnership program with we have done with the local government CETA as well as the national treasury. The 1,550 ward committees also received training. The framework for municipal develop workplace skills plan has been done and rolled out councillor practice qualification in Limpopo and Eastern Cape. We intend rolling out to the rest of other provinces, and these two were particularly targeted for this year as pilot. One of the major areas, Chairperson, that was raised last year by honorable members was around the outstanding job evaluations that continues to affect a lot of municipalities. As they were established and consolidated, others could not continue with completing the job grading task to deal with salary and wage gaps and so on. And this slide seeks to reflect the completion rate that has happened since the 208. We have made interventions. It has been a stalemate for quite some time, owing to a number of reasons. One being maybe non-establishment of joint employer-employee committees in municipalities, lack of auditing committees to audit the jobs that have been designed, lack of publication and so on. But quite confidently, Jefferson, we intend completing 87 municipalities, as you see, that are not done, but 197 we have done. What that means is that when the job grades are done in each province, they then get published. Once they are published, then it means each municipality can then align its structures and salaries in line with the job grades and ensure there's uniformity. And uniformity in this case is what has been approved by the bargaining committee, bargaining council, that of task grading. So we hope, Chairperson, that by December, these outstanding municipalities will be completed, because we have now set teams in place in each province to conclude this matter. In particular, Northern Cape, Northwest, and one municipality in Western Cape, which is the metro. So this is basically the slide that shows the grades as advertised. On the second major role of SALGA, that of being a representative body, this is what we are reporting, Chairperson, for the 08-09. We have indeed enhanced our engagement with major stakeholders, including participation in major IGR structures, National Council of Provinces, National Assembly, National Cabinet Clusters, MinMax, and Budget Forum, and so on. At a provincial level, Premier's Coordinating Forums. We have full participation around all of these bodies. We have also done an assessment of possible impact of 209 national and provincial elections to local government. And indeed, SALGA has been affected both at a positive level as well as a negative level, in the sense that quite a number of key members in the national leadership of SALGA, be it, that is the NEC, have now moved to provincial level and also to national level into positions of leadership there. And also at a provincial level, a similar picture has happened. We envisage in 2011 it will happen the same. We have also completed a municipal office bearer's handbook and substantial input to the major legislative process that has been undertaken last year by Parliament, one being the General Laws Amendment Act, Local Government Fiscal Powers Act, the 17th Constitutional Amendment, which is still at a draft stage, the Transportation Act, and Land Use Management Bill. SALGA has made comprehensive inputs and representation to make sure that inputs reflect indeed the practicalities of local government implementing these laws. We have also, on the major policy overhaul, policy review process, developed and represented members in terms of major policy positions that have been put in place, and SALGA developed positions around those. On the councillor support, we have also developed a comprehensive SALGA submission, communicated it to the presidency, to the Minister of Local Government, to various key bodies where this matter is grappled with, and we are confident that it is receiving the necessary attention. On the EDI restructuring, again, we continue to represent members on this vexed question of electricity distribution industry restructuring, and we will continue, as we present the report, highlight to the honourable members the key positions that SALGA has developed. On the devolution of housing function, again, in an ongoing way, we have developed key positions around that. Around the issue of municipal councillor pension fund, in detail, over the year under review, there has been a number of problems that were highlighted, and the committee last year asked SALGA, what are we doing around this matter? We are glad to report, Chairperson, that a comprehensive work input has been done by SALGA in a way to assist the board of the councillor pension fund to ensure that it's more responsive, it looks at governance matters and so on. But as always, SALGA's premise on this matter has always been guided by the acknowledgement of the law that the pension fund is a separate statutory body, and ours is to assist in areas where members have made representation to guide and provide support where necessary. We have met with them in 15 February 2008 when there were matters of allegations raised, and the NEC has at all times sought to highlight these matters in various other platforms, the then Minister of Finance, then Minister of Local Government, the Financial Services Board, and so on. And we have met, and these are some of the areas we have proposed during the year under review, 23 April, improvement in the governance issues, improvements in the administrative issues, concerns raised by member municipalities, financial status of the fund, litigation by fund against certain municipalities, and the key outcome is that rules of the fund will now be amended accordingly. And at the time we came here, they have indicated to us that indeed they are taking those matters. They have appointed a senior counsel to look into strengthen the governance rules of the fund. And in NMA 209, around the same matter, members mandated the National Executive Committee to convene a meeting within 60 days of national members. And in carrying out this task, the NEC of SALGA met with the Board of Trustees on the 24th of July, highlighted the issues raised by members, and in that meeting agreed that one of the major outstanding issues is around financial statements that were still outstanding. And the Board of Trustees undertook that at least by end of October, they envisage to have a meeting that they will convene. But as we meet, that meeting is not yet convened, and we will follow up as we go back around this matter. On the gender equity, Chairperson, starting in 2008, there's quite a lot of improvement, not only inside SALGA, but across the board around representation, almost 42% of representation. And as we continue to replace outgoing members within SALGA, the question of gender has been improved quite a lot. And as we go to 2011-2012 elections, this matter would occupy the highest consideration by the NEC to improve until we attain 50-50 representation at local government. As we stand in the 2008-2009, this is the gender picture within SALGA, and we think that there is room for improvement in an ongoing way at management level to truly attain a gender empowered organization in terms of equality. In terms of the advisory role of SALGA in the 2008-2009 financial year, around areas of advocacy and lobby, the primary health care services has been a major problem in municipalities. We are glad, Chairperson, to report that as at June, the members' assembly approved and adopted a policy position paper for organized local government on how to engage with the question of primary health care. Some provinces have moved and handed over some of these functions, Northern Cape and Western Cape and Eastern Cape at the district level and so on. But at least we now have a policy position that as we get into complicated provinces like Gauteng, where metropolitan municipalities provide this service, there's now a clear position that organized local government has taken. In short, what it says, Chairperson, is that where there's demonstrable capacity by municipalities to provide this function, those municipalities must be allowed to provide the function. And where there is a semblance of capacity and the need for augmenting same, once that capacity is gradually built, then those municipalities must be given the scope to drive and implement primary health care, because it's integrally linked to emergency services and other issues, and municipalities that have demonstrable capacity be allowed to implement. Housing function, the same approach on the devolution of housing functions. We have developed and approved through our members how the devolution of housing function is to be carried out, and same has been presented to the MINMEC of the past as well as the current MINMEC of human settlements. And there seems to be a sense of appreciation that where there's capacity, indeed measures need to be put in place to allow municipalities to implement housing to expedite the delivery. The guidelines on HIV and AIDS in three provinces have been implemented during the year under review, and case studies on improving land use management have been developed. Position papers on RSC replacement levies, local government equitable share, municipal social funding, the document in front of you, all the honorable members, captures exactly what SALGA has presented at the budget forum to continue to advocate for a review of the fiscal framework for local government. And there has been notable successes in that the Minister of Finance, in his 27th of October medium-term budget statement, has highlighted all of the issues that largely organized local government has raised. On the restructuring of electricity distribution, again, we have a comprehensive position, and we continue to grapple with this matter going forward. On the advisory role, again, municipal performance since 2006, we have now started a review of municipal performance with the intention of contributing to the local government turnaround strategy to look at how far we have fared since the 2006 electoral manifesto and how to assist in shaping a revamp of the areas of weakness in local government. The position paper on municipal response to the global economic crisis, it has been presented to local government MINMEC, and also we have presented it to the Presidential Coordinating Council and to guide how municipalities need to grapple. Indeed, some municipalities, Chairperson, are beginning to feel, like all other sectors of the economy, the crunch that the global economy has affected all areas. People who have lost jobs, unable to pay municipal services, disconnections, and the growing, the ballooning level of the indigency registers in municipalities. So it's an area that we have raised in the budget forum that there has to be a mechanism of assisting municipalities to tap into the national stimulus package that has been presented for other sectors of the economy. The Human Development Strategy Framework is currently being developed. We have finished some parts of its work, and all it seeks to do is to make sure that local government contributes to the reflection of the country's index on human development, on issues of primary health care, on issues of status at birth, and all areas that seek to improve the human condition, as well as looking at areas like early childhood development, infrastructure in municipalities. Coordinating and implementing energy efficiency campaigns, we have done this work jointly with the Department of Mineral Energy, framework for assessing credibility of IDPs, and also launch a strategic framework early this year in February on local government in partnership with the Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. In terms of our profiling role, to profile the work of local government in 2008-2009, Chairperson, we have indeed continued in an ongoing way to represent interests of municipalities in major fora, be it at a continental level, be it at an international level. But beginning at home, we have signed an MOU with the House of Traditional Leaders, developed a framework of implementation, and we think that during the year 2009-2010, the work of that joint partnership will guide provinces across in terms of how we engage with the House of Traditional Leaders on matters of rural development. In the international arena, we have concluded during the year review sister association partnership with our sister partners in Botswana, Namibia, and Mozambique, and also at a world level, highlighted issues of city diplomacy and UCLG level, UCLG being United Cities and Local Governments of the World, and also at a continental level through United Cities and Local Governments of Africa. We have also formalized relations with the United Kingdom on good practice schemes where we have implemented in 15 municipalities in South Africa areas that seek to implement capacity building on governance and areas that look at a decentralized model of governance where public participation is used to enhance. So these have been implemented during the year under review. Also, in terms of the challenges facing local government at the moment, Chairperson, with the intention to improve, there has been ongoing improvements in the delivery of services by the sphere of local government. Challenges yet remain profound and very strong. We think that for us to improve on the backlog of 208 and improve until the MDG targets of 2014, there has to be tremendous pace of improving the capacity of local government. In terms of ensuring that all municipalities, district, local, are given enough resources to drive these backlogs in such a way that we remain committed to the country's commitment of eradicating water, sanitation, electricity, and housing by 2014. We think that the 2011 opportunity might provide an appetite for launching a major overhaul to improve our capacity around these matters. On financial performance for 2008-2009, Chairperson, these are some of the financial headlines. We reported to the committee last year that one of the areas that continue to be a stress level for SALGA is the reliance on the payment of membership levies, which continues to prove to be a difficult source of revenue stream, in that it's a voluntary payment, and yet mandates of SALGA are not voluntary, and we continue to show those stress levels in the organization. It also showed very strongly during the year under 2008-2009. We have reported to the committee last year that we are busy working on a funding model to review SALGA's funding, and we have now completed the funding model, and we would also share with the committee with the intention of ensuring that the committee is fully sensitized on the areas we think SALGA needs to receive much more funding currently as it receives. This is the current contribution ratios around membership and government grants and other incomes. In terms of the statement of financial performance, we have really been affected during the year under review, as shown in the Auditor General report, that as an organization we face some challenges around provincial associations, two provincial associations, KwaZulu-Natal, as well as the Free State, that during the year under review from July last year indicated their withdrawal to SALGA in terms of being part of one organized local government body. And in terms of financial performance, it really affected SALGA in such a way that it rendered us to reflect an operating deficit of 8.5 million at the end of the year due to trade receivables of 14 million that could not be received, especially from the KwaZulu-Natal province as a result of the withdrawal. Performance comparison during 2008-2009, this is the membership growth, and also as part of increasing the capacity of the organization, we have now sought to improve on programs as well as the institutional capacity to drive the program. The payment levels have been markedly improved in other areas, and you will see that in areas where membership payments have not been made, in KwaZulu-Natal, 28%, it really affected the organization, and also Free State. But towards the end of March, Free State was resolved to an extent that as at end March 2009, 51% payment levels were achieved. In terms of annual financial statements, outcomes of the Auditor General, this is just a statement of the financial position of the organization as at end of March, contrasted with 31 March 2008, as well as a statement of financial performance for the shorter period of 9 months, as well as the full period of 12 months. I will not go to the details in terms of the cash flow statements. Maybe through the engagement with members, we could clarify some of the areas where there is a need for clarity. On the audit outcomes and action plans, Chairperson, we reported last year that we are on course for the 2008-2009 as part of our turnaround strategy to deliver a clean audit report for SALGA in the 2008-2009. However, our plans have not been realized, Chairperson, to our disappointment, owing to a number of challenges that we had. And the Auditor General has been unable to express an opinion on our statements, and reason cited in the audit report is the unilateral termination of the SALGA KwaZulu-Natal back into Kwanaloga, being the primary cause of the disclaim of the audit opinion in 2008-2009. We have set ourselves that from the past where we have been over the last 5 years, we set ourselves this target in 2007-2008. We indeed achieved that target. We were setting ourselves this target of clean audit, but this is what we got as a result of the challenge that we have indicated, Chairperson. The action plan to address AG's findings, SALGA NEC in an ongoing way engages the leadership of SALGA in KwaZulu-Natal, and there has been positive engagement recently around SALGA office bearers at the level of the NEC, as well as the Kwanaloga office bearers, to look at ways in which the current impasse could be resolved, and there is indeed a positive spirit on both leadership levels to resolve these matters, to make sure that the administration of SALGA in KwaZulu-Natal is incorporated back to SALGA, and all areas that have been challenges in terms of resource sharing model and so on, it is actually done. There is now a process in place around ensuring that the work of the committee that has been established jointly to ensure that the modalities around the administrations are shaped properly, and all the outstanding issues that were dealt with in the previous investigations are concluded, and make sure that the organization functions back as one organization. At the level of major areas like banking accounts and the delegation of authority framework, the National Executive Committee of SALGA has approved a delegation framework to make sure that all areas that may have been of concern at provincial level around certain delegations, certain bank accounts that need to be opened, the NEC has now agreed that a work process needs to be put in place to provide those matters. From where we are and where we are going forward, Chairperson, we think that we will continue our efforts to turn our hopes into reality, to make sure that the voice of local government is strengthened and it continues to shape the debates around major transformation initiatives. At this point in time, there's major work that has been done and led by our Ministry of COGDA to develop a turnaround strategy. We think that with the shape of that strategy, we will be able to come 2011 going forward to continue grappling with the areas of improvement for the local sphere of government. But as we go forward, there's quite a number of areas that will continue to shape the work of local government, that of grappling with the outstanding backlogs that continue to blight a number of citizens in our country, lack of access to education, lack of access to shelter, sanitation, and so on, as indicated by our president on his State of the Nation 3 June, to indicate that indeed we shall not rest as we continue to implement a transformation of our society. There's quite a number of issues, though, that keeps us awake at night as SALGA. The non-resolution of the KZN matter keeps us awake at night. There is now a process, as I've outlined. The instability in local government at the moment, the service delivery protest, 63 being January this year and September, have been reported. Major of those 58 since April 22 continue to affect local government. The impact of the proposed electricity price hike and the restructuring of electricity continues to keep the sphere of local government awake at night, as well as the processes around implementing our positions on the primary health care. We have now shaped APEC priorities for 2009-2010 around 8 major areas to make sure that the work done by the sphere of local government is aligned to the medium-term policy priorities outlined by the new administration of 2009-2014. In short, the issues of climate change, the issues of councillor support, the issues of profiling local government human development strategy, and aligning these to the 2009 electoral mandate, that of halving poverty, equitable distribution of benefits, and improved national health base and safety of citizens. We have a pivotal role that as SALGA, we are guiding our members to contribute to these new 2009 electoral mandate priorities of 2014. So the key developments, in short, Chairperson, these are just the remaining slides, that keep us also on the radar screen, is the issue of salary and wage negotiations. Just to share the committee that we have now successfully concluded a salary and wage negotiation for the sector over a multi-year term of 3 years under the most difficult circumstances, the robust environment, but it has ended on the 31 of July with an agreement that provided for a three-year phased agreement with the offers on the table. And we have done a comprehensive engagement right through until the final round of negotiations. And in short, Chairperson, this is what has been settled as parties, just for the information of the committee. And a number of issues continue to be raised around this matter. How will local government afford this increase and so on? But the agreement, Chairperson, contains within itself a safety mechanism for municipalities that are unable to afford the offers that have been agreed collectively to apply for exemptions and also to allow a process of evaluation and so on. Around these areas, so far, 119 municipalities have responded to the proposal. And only one municipality indicated the issue of non-affordability, and that was the city of Cape Town. And compared to 2009-2009, the agreements in the public service are relatively comparable in terms of the difficulties that we went through. In short, the National Executive Committee on the 28th to 30th September 2009 resolved on a number of issues that it considers as very pertinent to the middle-term phase of local government: the state of municipal finances and challenges, the quality of local democracies, the Minister of Human Settlements, and the 2009-2014 medium-term. And we were quite pleased, Chairperson, that a number of ministers came and shared perspectives around their work and how their work will impact local government going forward and how local government will work jointly with the key ministries around these matters. These are some of the key outcomes that have been agreed around these matters. We also play our role around the areas of curbing the abuse of state resources and combating of corruption. SALGA National Leadership has committed itself around developing clear guidelines around these matters, and also the budget forum issues, as I've indicated, have now been done. Around the Green Paper on Policy for Performance Improvement Strategic Planning, we have now developed a position around this work that is coordinated by the presidency to make sure that the work of local government is reflected there, and in some way we are able to play a role in shaping the course of local government. We have also participated in the local government in Durban in October 2009, a very successful event. And also on the 20th of October, just to share with the committee, there's a full document in your pack around the input we have made to the president's meeting on the 20th of October held here in Cape Town. We have outlined in detail around major areas that impact in local government, and we were quite pleased in terms of the input the president made at the meeting, highlighting some of those areas that they will be working together with the sphere of local government strengthening. The powers and functions issues we have raised and we have made key proposal around these matters. Around the institutional systems in local government, we have made key proposals. around the political system, the administrative systems and capacity constraints. And here we are using the benefit of the 15-year review of local government transition since 1993 to date, how some of these issues in the white paper were envisaged and how they have ended up being realized on the ground. The cross-cutting issues impacting local government, transformation and restructuring, governance challenges, the local government resources and councillor support were raised. The full details are in the pack. On the ESCOM multi-year price determination application 2, we are also in the process of dealing with this matter. It's a current issue, and we will just share with the members some of the preliminary issues that we are raising as organized local government that are worth considering as we grapple with this application until its determination on March 2010. We have received this application on the 30th of September 2009. It proposes application for the multi-year determination 2010 to 2012. We have reviewed the proposal and met with ESCOM on 16th and 28th of October, 22 October to clarify issues. We have also reviewed certain supporting documents, and we will be consulting with major bodies around this. Some of the issues that we have detailed thus far in the application is around the proposed price increase, its description, the impact on municipalities, the price increase in context, the national policy context, and balancing the issue of demand and supply, and so on. All of these areas will constitute the shape of SALGA's comprehensive response to the issues. The impact on municipalities, on the face of it, these are some of the areas that we are beginning to pick up, that it might sound an interesting option, but indeed it's an area that will be a challenge for municipalities, in that the dominant base of revenue for electricity is residents, and under the global economic crisis, it's going to prove very difficult for municipalities to be able to raise revenues to depressed communities. The impact on the revenue, we will also be engaging NERSA and National Treasury to establish some of the areas that relate to these issues. And we have highlighted some of the flaws that have been indicated in their methodology around comparisons with international bodies. Regulation on new capacity, we have made suggestions on how these matters ought to be looked at. The demand management, we have also made detailed submission, and also on the alternative approach to dealing with these matters. I'm just skipping through, Chair, in short, just to give a highlight of some of the areas. The adequacy of revenue, the alternative funding models around the regulation, and the free basic electricity issues that ESCOM is proposing. We are making proposal on how this matter needs to be looked at in terms of protecting the poor. On the EDI restructuring, we have raised the issue around the 17th constitutional amendment, and some of the areas that remain unresolved are critical areas to local government, and these areas range from shareholding, the governance, the transfer of electricity, compensation, and consideration for amendment of the constitution, and we have made suggestions around areas where we have concerns. We have made proposals around the amendment, and we will continue to share these with the committee in detail should the committee require a full detailed engagement on the matter. On the single public service, now named integrated public service, we have retained our core positions on what we highlighted in the last financial year, and we will continue to grapple with this major policy arrangement guided by the policy positions of organized local government around these matters. On the governance challenges, which is the very last slide, on the local government turnaround strategy, we have shared in the presentation with the President some of the experiences that are faced with municipalities around the upsurge of protest, and how they have actually increased dramatically in 2009 to date, having recorded 63 major protests. And this is the national synopsis that SALGA has done in 2009, contrasting with other years thus far, to have recorded almost 44 up to July 2009. And this is just a spread across all provinces, dominant provinces being Western Cape, Gauteng, as well as Northwest and Mpumalanga. One of the areas that we have reported on the 14th of August to the NCOP is the apparent lack of consultation as envisaged in the legislation around when provinces contemplate Section 139 as well as Section 106, consultation with organized local government. This slide maps out areas in each province where interventions have taken place, where areas of consultation local government are either unknown or where in certain provinces there has indeed been consultation. We have highlighted the issue of this inconsistency, and we think that in engaging with the committee as well as at the level of NCOP, some of these issues indeed will require some engagements to make sure that indeed where these are envisaged, we limit the scope of embarrassment where there is counter-legal actions by this fee against that fee and so on, and carry out the spirit of Section 40 of the Constitution. Key observations around protests have been highlighted around these areas, some of them major being programs that indeed are not core mandates of local government in terms of assignment of responsibility, be it housing, be it schools, be it health, and so on. There are, however, areas where indeed it is the non-responsiveness by the sphere of local government. The local government turnaround strategy, as we have indicated, were fully participants on it, and the metropolis issue has been raised quite recently as a major policy development. So far as SALGA, we will be engaging with the debate as it unfolds, and maybe at official consultation levels we will be able to shape our positions around this matter, and we will be able to share with the committee once our position is shaped by the National Executive Committee. But we are aware that there is this major policy development that is mooted. Chairperson, in short, we are on course. We are experiencing challenges. We have challenges in KwaZulu-Natal. Free State have been resolved. Resource challenges in terms of limitation of funding for SALGA continue to constrain us from executing our mandate. We think that we have turned the corner, and we are on course on driving a credible and consistent agenda of lifting the voice of organized local government to participate in the major policy discourse. We do not have resources. We are struggling, and we think that there's a need for relooking of the funding model, and where necessary, the support of the committee will be much welcome in reviewing the fiscal allocation to SALGA to be able to continue this work. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. A journey of 1,000 miles begins with the decision to take a decision to take a journey. And then there's there's the presentation from SALGA. He has reported on the year under review, including developments after that year, progress in relation to some of the issues of concern to us, obviously, in the report. And so, questions and comments.
Chair, the process issue maybe first.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be advisable for the KZN story to be put on the table first? Since there's a delegation here, can't they explain what the story is about? And then we could have questions after that.
Okay. You
don't think the report by the...
No.
Okay. What do you want clarity about?
Well, why can't they
come here? I presume they come here to make a presentation or something and tell us what's going on.
Go ahead, Dutch.
The citizen maybe can explain
In terms of the presence of KZN office there.
Well, I guess there are two issues. Thank you very much, Chairperson. There are two issues that can be raised. The first is really that SALGA can add an interrogation to any committee, any platform, members from other provinces in relation to national delegation. The second is really that having been faced by the case that challenge, we have been talking to our own colleagues in KwaZulu-Natal for some time, and we took a decision that there will be need from time to time that when you go to Parliament, appear in front of portfolio committees on matters that touch on some of the experiences I've had that would be very wise indeed to bring them along just in case they need to engage directly on those specific issues. So that's why I'm here.
Thank you, Chairman. I don't know whether I'm clear. I just want the cleric to do the KZN come with their own reports, or are they coming at the same time?
Okay. No. Can I, before you do that,
there's one report.
In the report of the CEO, he reported on progress in discussing and resolving these issues. And what they are saying now is that their presence here is part of implementation of that agreement to progressively come back into SALGA. So that's the reason, as I understand, in the presentation given there. So can we then proceed to Sophie and then the gentleman from Hotel Kamwell, we've been down. Please, both of you, when you speak, I want to know which towns you come from.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Sophie?
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I think we came here as a one team, which is SALGA umbrella body, as a unitary structure. We had our lessons, and when you start things, there'll be hiccups. But as an organization, we happen to resolve it, come up with conclusion, and said we are one family, one big family, and we have to go together. So we're here as one SALGA board, and we've unfolded the process, and we'll win, and we've already won. Thank you very much.
Ngiyabonga Baba Stan. Uthe afishe ukuthi siphuma api. Ngicabanga ukuthi sinsizwa, they will be familiar with my mother tongue. Definitely, only Democrats they have to learn. Yeah. Baba, angusho lokuthi ngiqhamuka mina kumasipala usisonke under KZN. Sisonke is a district municipality that is centered around on the southern part of KwaZulu-Natal, with the boundary with Eastern Cape, Kokstad, and Matatiele, the most talk about Matatiele, and with the border with Lesotho on southern part of KwaZulu-Natal, border with Lesotho. Definitely, as we kept saying, and our CEO Xolile saying that we are one team. Of course, conflict is natural. Sometimes it happens as a natural thing, but the best thing is how to handle it, like what we have done. We have since sat down, discussed the issue with our chairperson and the executive of SALGA National. We have agreed to work this thing out and leave SALGA from provinces to national as a one team, and we are busy working on it. You can easily, chairperson, understand it was a matter of politics and administration, but we are busy working with. We've got a team on the ground working 100%. I will say 100%, because all of us are keen to manage the issue harmoniously and reflect the unitary system which we are bound to work on it. That is the message from KZN, that we are trying to put everything together. We have even said CEO Xolile and our CEO from President must work together and formulate all the way forward. I think Chairperson, that is all. We are going to call. That is one corner. We are one point and move forward with one spirit of moving forward. Thanks very much.
Peter Smith.
Well, Chair, it's very agreeable that everybody's working together. Of course, well, I'm not going to complain about that. It's delightful. But it doesn't address my question, which is, what is the conflict that resulted in the position that the ended up in the disclaimer? So I'm still interested in the factual position that arose first, prior to the fact that we love each other now. That's a separate issue.
Okay, go ahead, CEO. I want Sophie and then the CEO. Oh, Chairperson, you want to start? Yeah.
No, maybe the best way to summarize, you know, my colleagues are here to add, subtract. The best way to start with this is to say a misunderstanding did develop between Salga National, for lack of a better expression, and Salga KZN. And that misunderstanding centered on a decision that was taken at the Salga conference. Those of you who have been following this issue remember that the Salga case that then had come to the conference to say they need to be given time until 2011 to resolve whatever kind of issues in KwaZulu-Natal and become fully integrated within Salga in the next conference. What I was speaking about there really was that although administratively maybe one, but Salga says that then will continue to be also be referred to as Wanalog until 2011. The decision was referred for processing to the National Executive Committee of Salga. It was managed fairly well, and there was an agreement that that's the route that we're going to follow. But in time, certain administrative problems arose. And it is these problems that led to a situation where an idea began to develop that perhaps Wanalog amongst the Salga members of KwaZulu-Natal could go its own route, separate route. But we've had many discussions over a long period of time. And we have now come to one conclusion. And that conclusion really is that the best way to manage Salga and organize local government affairs is to really to operate under one roof and be one organization. The decision to manage things towards 2011 still stands. By the time of 2011, case that it will be fully integrated into Salga. And we'll be using the Salga Constitution.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe I'm still new in the committee, that's why I'm still grappling with Combat Masondo that day. I'm not clear why the Kwanolog and the leader with the Saga Fest and PP. Because we just said that there was an administration and all that. Why do the Kwanolog and the leader with Saga Fest? I know that there's a process now which I think now we are coming together. Why? What was the reason? I don't hear it exactly.
They never really left. If I just explain that they never really left. They're in the process of leaving, but the issues have been resolved.
Yeah. only in the bedroom.
Chair, now I just wanted to ask on this issue. According to the legislation, the metro in a province must actually determines which body is recognized. If a metro and the majority of municipalities break away, then the minister must recognize that association. If the metro doesn't break away, you know, they can't, they won't be recognized. My only question about this whole issue, because I know that the metro is governed by the ANC, all I'm asking is, I know that 33 of the municipalities of the 15 KwaZulu-Natal is governed by the IFP. So what I gather from what you're saying is not a political matter. It's not a question of the IFP municipalities breaking away. It was also ANC-controlled municipalities. So the issue was more about, it seems to me, the governance by SALGA nationally and some other issues. It wasn't only a political break. I just want to have clarity on that.
After the conference, we took a precise conscious decision that we're going to leave KZN with their constitution. But there should be a memorandum of understanding signed between national and the province. The rep from KZN has been sitting in national Southern, so there was no agreement. Even today, Ume Amlavin is sitting as an both representing the province as well as the deputy chair. So there is no conclusion. What Mayor Masondo was raising was to say precisely because of that particular resolution of the National Conference, for the National Conference resolution itself, that we have to leave South Aguanologa to operate it until 2011. There were issues raised on a matter that was relating to delegation framework by a number of provinces. So it's not only KZN. All the provinces raised the matter. Hence, at our last NC in Okocha, we have developed the delegation framework. Nonetheless,
can I just stop you there?
Yes.
You know, this informality of calling you so. In a formal meeting like this. Let me, you see, we need to clarify, because now that Honorable Matroba raised it here as well, that what I'm hearing you say, I'm saying it because we've had this report before here, that previously these entities existed in a federal-like structure.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a decision to become a unitary structure.
Yes.
Now, in deciding that, the dispute is, what are the implications of this decision about the kind of decisions we must take as provinces? And which decisions must be taken at the national level and which way? So as I hear you are saying this, then Kwanologa said, for a number of reasons, we would like to be given an opportunity to continue to exist in this manner until 2011. Right?
Mm-hmm.
After which, like all other provinces, we will have resolved whatever the issue that we have, and then we'll come together and operate as a unitary structure. That's what I want to explain that I hear you properly. Okay. That's what I wanted to put on the table, so that we are operating from the same wavelength. Matt, you wanted to ask? What contribution? No. Let's not go there first. That the detail of the consequences of that, they will respond to that now. But that's fine. The overall principle first, yeah.
So, based on that, Chairperson, administratively, there was some of the hiccups because when we take the decision, people didn't know because it was a temporarily that says, in terms of delegation, we'll take everything, all the powers, but we'll give certain powers to the province. So that we develop systems that are uniform, and that so that we can move to that issue of the clean audit as a target that we raised, because previously we could not move neither closer to a clean audit, precisely because there were different types of auditing purposes from all the provinces were audited individually.
Yes.
Well, there was an issue that was raised because you said administratively all the provinces will be run by national, the account to national. So we started to, even system that we're putting, we started to centralize. But there was some of the hiccups where there was, even as the COS reported, there were certain anomalies that happened in a number of provinces, and we engaged in investigations. But that didn't mean that politicians left to participate in such. They were there in South. Then investigations are closed. So the issue of delegations and powers and the framework we've developed, and we know that management and administration will still be accountable to national. But we're seeing provinces now, they can start to do hire and fire. They can as well start to develop and control some of the finances, including supply chain, because now we've put systems in place. Earlier on, there were no systems in place. That was a matter that has brought, I think, a misunderstanding in a number of provinces. That's not only KZN. It was all the provinces, of course. They had that thing. So the working group was given a mandate to develop a final delegation framework to the provinces. But we did so because we know that we've already pushed on systems, we've already developed systems, and we're aware the systems are going to help us to move for a clean audit even in the next election.
Chairperson, I think I tried to put the record straight by saying the matter rose from administration. I think we must be clear from KZN. In terms of municipal subscription to national, that was the issue, which was the bone of contention, and which was the contentious issues, saying KwaZulu-Natal have about 61 municipalities contributing so much. So we need a budget for so much from Southern National. That was the issue. I think we must be open.
You were fighting about how much must come back.
Yeah, it was about administration, saying that if they are being controlled, the stuff is fair. National, with all municipalities must pay their contribution direct to national. Then we get the budget from national coming down.
Okay.
So it must be equal to what we have contributed. That was the issue.
Proportionate rather than equal.
Yes, but we said if Salk can take about 80 million from KZN, 1.8 million, then we must get a budget of that much,
okay.
Not less than that. That was the issue because we wanted to run our own campaign at KZN in terms of aligning ourselves with the clean audit. We wanted to have this budget week, like our councillor Sophie is always coming down on a budget week to KZN to launch and work on it with an official from Saka National. We don't have any other dispute other than that. It was a matter of administration issue, saying even our CEO will be called deputy CEO because administratively will be managed at national. That was an issue, but as I said, we have met, we have been working on it, how are we going to manage the issue of administration? And we got the committee in place, we got our national CEO and our KZN CEO working how to align all those things. But you'll remember that there were properties involved and everything. Everything was just around that situation.
Arising from that, then, and going back to the annual report, then the question I would ask is why was the AG unable to complete the audit, given the fact that every so cooperative, why was KZN apparently not forthcoming with what the AG required for him to complete the audit professionally? And then secondly, what is the status of the withheld fund? I mean, is it sort of sitting in some issue, some account waiting to be paid back once everything is resolved, or is it money that's gone, that's been killed elsewhere? What happens there?
Okay, member. This is very important to have the heart of the neighbor itself. So, now saying that we must proceed to other pressure, we will now respond to this and if we have any other questions, let me make sure that we must move to other aspects that we must move into the software. You want to add to that?
Yeah.
Okay, yes,
Just on the audit, reports. Apart from that, there is on page 133, there are reports of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Now, I acknowledge these days it's very, very difficult to get past the AGM when it picks up all sorts of small things and that type of thing. But will you just please comment over and above the problem with KwaZulu-Natal, the other aspects on that page, and there are more than one, that you had still had problems with your with the general audits report. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. My question is outside maybe of the audit report. I don't remember the slide, but the question will be the presentation states that they've developed a gender action plan, which they will make sure that they will monitor the process of women presentation to 2011 elections up to 50%. My question will be, how are they going to monitor it? Because the process starts at party political level down there. As SALGA, how are you going to monitor that there is 50% women representation? And also, this is 2008-2009 annual report. But you haven't made mention, you've mentioned that we've hosted annual women local government in conference, but you haven't made mention the 2009 one that they held in Bloemfontein.
The question that Peter rose about the monies is your question. You just change the words and ask it different. I just wanted to say that it must be attributed to you, it's added to you as well. That's fine.
Chair and honorable members and colleagues from SALGA. Good morning. Thank you, Chair. I think for quite some time this committee has been raising a concern about the finances of SALGA. But one other thing that we found it rather strange is the question of the audit committee itself. I see on page 129 of the annual report that the meetings attended by them is the chairperson has got 5 and one matroa, 5. Yet they are about 2, 4, 6, 8. It brings to mind how can the two have meetings? Because in my view, they could not correlate. And it brings to mind whether, therefore, that's my question, the audit committee is functioning properly. We have raised this matter for quite some time, Chair. And I've also noticed that some resigned and some joined. And in addition to the matter of finance that has been raised by my colleagues, I would appreciate if SALGA can brief us about the effectiveness of the audit, internal audit committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for taking care of me and making me comfortable. My questions are outside the audit report. I've seen in the slides the presenter has put on the training of councillors and audit committee. And when one look at, I've only seen statistics, the output. that out of so many who enrolled, so many have passed. I would like to know how does SALGA follow up to see what is being acquired on those training is being plowed back. Because when one looks at the percent, out of 470-something, 400 have successfully completed the training, one could really see wonders to at the ground level whereby people are really implementing what they are training. Number two is the issue of primary health care. I think the issue of devolution has been there for some time. Devolution of primary health care to local municipality, and I hear the presenter saying that really those who have capacity must be allowed to take over. Now my problem will be, what will happen to those who doesn't have capacity? Because one has seen that the primary or the health condition or health facility, we really are trying to do what is expected from them, are those in urban, in metros, and those in rural, and are those who don't have capacity. Really, they are not getting what they are supposed to, and that means that make them to move to better places for health care, and that impacts on their allocation of funds. Then the last part is signing of a MOU with the House of Traditional Leadership, which play a critical role in rural development. I think one would like to see that memorandum of understanding, because one of the things which really hamper delivery, which really interferes with delivery, is the relationship between the traditional leadership and the council. And one would want to see how have the memorandum of understanding have addressed the relationship. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think my question has partly been covered. I wanted to touch on the role of traditional leaders and the critical role they're meant to be playing as far as rural development is concerned. Traditional leaders by nature are limited as far as resources availability to them. And I'd like to gain an understanding what role has been identified for them to participate on rural development, and the availability of funds for that, where will it be coming from? Thank you.
Yeah. Chair, thanks. Thanks very much. Maybe just a request to start with. You know, I'd like to thank SALGA first for this document here, the Indaba one, or the meeting here. But, you know, strike me as you were speaking, CEO, that there were quite a lot of documents to which you made reference as position papers and all sorts of things, some of which I suppose you feel are sort of work in progress, but others I think were very useful for us to have sight of, because some of the issues you're raising, some of the issues you're concerned with, in fact all of them I would think, are issues we're concerned with too. And to have a SALGA position on these, you know, not at the conclusion of a process, but at the beginning and the middle of a process is very useful. Because they're here, for example, when some of these policy issues get translated into a bill, at that point we get a bill which says people consulted SALGA. Fine, great, very, very good. But frankly, what SALGA has had to say on the preceding, you know, 10 versions of the bill and 10 years of negotiations and inputs, we don't know about. So I'd like to make a request that those documents you feel are not too close to your heart, you know, in terms of anything sensitive, they don't have copies. It empowers us. Okay, then some things on the report. Chair, the first thing I'm a little bit concerned with is this issue of, you know, the employer role and this whole salary remuneration package renegotiation, the three-year thing, and then the statement made that, in fact, you know, the implication is that it's fully affordable because if you look at the results, only one municipality has applied for exemption, and the implication being, well, that's fine because the rest will be okay. But I don't buy that, Chair, because if you look at the current position, particularly the weaker municipalities, They're already spending far too much on capital, on current expenditure, mostly salaries and remuneration, and the capital projects and service delivery suffers. Now, I would like to see something which says the impact of those sort of remuneration packages on current stats, which are already unacceptable, where people are not spending sufficient on service delivery and too much on staffing. So I don't know whether you have such figures, but I'd like to see them, because my gut feeling would be that, in fact, in many of the poor municipalities, it is unaffordable. They're spending too much already on salaries, and now they're going to be spending more. And some of them, in fact, are, even if you look at the way the equitable share is utilized, even though it's made up of certain components, you know, intended for certain things, they don't follow that even. So I've got a concern there. Second issue, Chair, is on this capacity building. I mean, I applaud the role that SALGA plays, obviously, in training. I mean, it's a good thing, and your partnership with other role players in this one. But I'd be very interested to know what sort of feedback you got, because in our interaction as a committee, for example, with the CETA over the years, one of the constant refrains has been, fine, you conduct workshops, you have numbers reflecting people attending. But that's not the same thing as an outcome that's acceptable. That's just an output that may not translate into anything very significant. Now, one of the figures you gave now, which I thought was looks good on paper, but my question is, what does it mean? Is you trained 1,550 ward committees. Now, given that at the Daba up in Kuleni last month, the weakness of the ward committees was identified as one of the constant refrains of the failure in communications and so on and so forth. If you train 1,550, then the question is, well, how good is that training, or how effective was it? So I'd like to know what sort of feedback you, as SALGA, do. I mean, sort of what sort of follow-up do you do, should I say, to ascertain whether your training in such things is effective and whether it transforms people's behavior? Because if it's a question of people coming to a training session to have a nice lunch and chat to their mates and go home, then obviously that might look good on paper, but won't mean much otherwise. Chair, the issue of a strange statement was made, I thought. I can't remember what slide it was on. To the effect that it was the slide dealing with backlogs, the Millennium Development Goals and where we were with the various four or five categories. And then the statement was made, well, in 2011, there's a great opportunity to have a major overhaul in respect of eradicating these backlogs. And you spoke about some senior resources. I'm not quite sure what was meant by that, because unfortunately some of the slides had to go quite quickly. I suppose you felt constrained by time. But what did you mean to say that in 2011 there's an opportunity for some major overhaul in the manner in which we eradicate backlogs? Because other than capacity and financial resources, I'm not quite sure what there is. Are you anticipating, for example, having solved your capacity constraints, or are you anticipating large financial resources to deal with the matter? Otherwise, what changes in 2011 is my question, I suppose. Chair, on page 22, there's a slide. At page 24, there's a slide I don't understand. It shows on the left-hand side your membership levy is going up from 100 to 110 million. Programming costs going down. And then employee-related costs going up 28%. 28% is a large amount. I mean, that's approaching a third for your employee cost to go. Could you just relate the two? I mean, you're ending up with a deficit, but your cost of programs goes down, which could be a good thing. I don't know, really know what it means. But your employee cost goes up maybe 30%. And then just two quick ones. Slide 31. Chair, this is a constant refrain I have. I'm sorry, I just repeat it ad nauseum, but there's nostalgia this time. And that is, I would have thought that a top priority in this country is dealing with unemployment. We all know that in the municipal sector as a whole, there's a trend towards greater capital intensification, and in fact, the municipal segment sphere is shedding jobs. So my question is, when you look at your apex priorities, numbers 1 to 8, I don't see generation of jobs there. I see it is in the next slide, which is aligning to the general mandate about halving unemployment. But I don't see you, as SALGA, saying we, as the municipal sphere, need to create jobs. And since there is the shedding of jobs across municipalities, and particularly are the lower skill jobs, it frightens me that SALGA says nothing about it.
Yeah. Can I ask you to just indicate what your source is?
Oh, well, that's Treasury.
About Treasury's report.
Treasury's Local Government Review. But I think the data has been held up elsewhere as well. And if you look at particularly the metros and so on, the capital intensification is a real problem. And then my last one, Chair, to make it easier for you to chair, as Chair, is I'm very disappointed in slide 37. Sorry, I can't remember why. Ah, yes. Eskom. Now, I would have thought, Chair, we have a crisis of affordability already. So last year we had 31% increase, and now here you're talking about another 161. So for the consumers that pay their bills, there's a huge issue. I mean, the figures you see are that for somebody who is paying, say, 600 to 800 rand a month bill, ordinary household, a year ago, at the end of this Eskom hike, it's going to be 3,000 odd. Now, your response to that is to say, hey, whoopee duck, it's a windfall. It's a windfall because municipalities which distribute are now going to get loads of extra cash. So the fact that consumers are going to be nailed and are going to be bankrupted by this, your response is, well, we're getting 10% off of that, so that's cool. We've got more money to spend. I find that quite frightening, and I don't know that that's the response that's suitable in terms of the crisis of affordability. Thank you.
Please start with the audit related questions and then come to the others and so on, because I think that's important.
Chair, I'll ask the CFO to clarify the first question that relate to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And I'll draw the members' attention to page 216 of the report. That is where it is clarified in terms of the areas of irregularity and wasteful expenditure. It's disclosed in the note there. She will just highlight those areas that constitute the 4 million the honorable member has raised in page 216.
Thank you. Just over 2 million of that expenditure relates to finance leases. What happened when Salga was first established, we entered into certain leases, although in operations it's an operating lease in that at the end of the term we give the asset back to the lessor, but for accounting purposes it is deemed a finance lease. So on the finance lease, when you account for it in your financial statements, there's an interest portion and then there's a capital repayment portion. So the interest portion is classified as irregular expenditure. On an annual basis, we then have to write to National Treasury to grant us exemption or condonement of those expenditures. So once we have drawn up the financials for 08-09, we have written to Treasury for condonement of those expenditures. That's the bulk of it. We have not received any communication back as yet.
So the
only general
complaint is because you don't have that.
Yeah.
You don't have clearance from Treasury.
Yes.
When the timing?
How can it be too clear to Treasury?
I don't know.
The interest portion is classified as fruitless expenditure. The interest portion in our repayment of the operating lease. So when you take out, for example, a copier machine, a high-volume copier, it's maybe worth 150,000, but you actually pay back, for example, 300,000. Then there's an interest portion included in there, a financing option. So that interest portion, Treasury deems as fruitless expenditure, so we have to write to them for condonement of it on an annual basis until the lease expires. What we've done subsequently is we've applied to enter onto leases that Treasury takes out for all public or all government entities, so there's no interest portion in that. So basically this will recur until we've completed those leases, and then those expenditure will not appear on our books anymore.
Any other questions on that?
On that one?
Yeah, you want to ask it?
I don't understand. I still don't understand why it's deemed fruitless. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're buying an asset and you have financing costs, is it because the whole purchase shouldn't have happened in the first place? It's not the method of financing per se. It's just the Auditor General didn't want you to spend money on that. Or is it the fact that it's a finance cost of a genuine, a normal asset?
I understand.
Slowly. We will catch up with you. Understand it. Try it.
Okay.
With class you can stay, right?
No, you don't have to.
To us, fruitless expenditure is something that is wasteful.
No, no.
Yes, reckless.
He knows that.
Okay.
Yeah, he'll explain to us. Yes.
Okay.
Chair, it's not that AG is saying we should.
There's a problem of
lawyers, finance people, and doctors. They have a strange language which always has to be decoded by us decision makers. You see, in negotiations we used to throw away the lawyers outside of Codex, politically sort out the issues and then call them in to translate it into agreements. Because otherwise you wouldn't do that. So please, you're one of them. Just try and clarify it better for me.
Chair, it's like taking out an asset on hire purchase. You pay back a capital portion and you pay back the interest portion. Now, PFMA defines fruitless expenditure as avoidable, expenditure that could have been avoidable, for example. So if we had bought the asset cash on that day, instead of financing it over 5 years or 3 years, we would not have paid interest. So every year there's an interest portion in our repayment back to the lessor, being Nashua, for copiers, etc. So Treasury deems that as fruitless expenditure, and we have to apply for condonement of it.
Your reasons for leasing that area for that period of time. What was the reason?
It's affordability, Chairperson. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. That reference to page 216.
Yeah.
There has been an opening balance there on this. Reconciliation of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And there was 95.579 on opening balance. And then fruitless wasteful expenditure current year has tripled 289.139. Perhaps if you can just, when you're explaining this, what you're explaining to us, in that context, we'll understand. The other things are about irregular expenditures that are down the line, but for now, so that I can understand you, just to fix ourselves there.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
I'm sure I'm missing something.
This sounds to me like a treasury control measure, okay, which is regular in matters like this. And that's what you're saying we don't understand. But what is it that...
If it's a definitional issue, in other words, if the state uses capital to buy goods and not... doesn't contract with the leases and things like that, and they define anything that has interest payment as irregular unless it's condoned.
Yes.
I mean, if it's a technical definition, I accept that. But if you look at page 133, for example, it talks about fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred as a result of interest and penalties due to late payment. So there, I presume it's your culpability in not paying your bills on time that resulted in penalties and interest. Now, I don't know how those relate to the same thing. 133, the first paragraph.
Okay. As highlighted by CEO, whether KZN issue, it came with challenges in terms of our cash flow constraints. So we paid our PAYE payments late for 2 months, and that was the interest and penalties we incurred of $289,000.
On the other issues, if we proceed from that
point, the women conference issue that was raised,
Oh. We finished the audit questions. Have you finished it? The audit, disclaimer questions and so on. Will the money still flow back and so on when you finalize the presidency? Okay.
Chair, there was a question raised about a minimum, how much was raised at KZN. In total, there was about 11M, of which the 4M of it was paid in the central account.
Any other
questions? Chair, of course, there was about 11 million raised there. From members' contribution and at KZN, of which 4 million of it was submitted to our central account as our state. Hence, you know where we come from. I just wanted to address that particular matter. Perhaps. The balance paid in the province for them to run their program, which includes the program that was relating to.
It wasn't handed back to the project. That was UDI, but they just kept it.
No, they bought a separate bank account.
Yeah.
So it was controlled by the administration then. But the 11 million was sent to us.
When UDI has an interesting. No, this. Yes?
Chairperson, before you. I want to get in. Maybe I don't understand very well. During the presentation, it was said because of the non contribution of KZN of 4 million to SALGA, it led them to get the disclaimer audit.
Yes.
Now they're saying they've received the news.
The timing, let's hear about that, yeah.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just to say that the question of access to books in the case of that is a matter that stands. It is an issue that will have to be followed up as we resolve the issues. All we can say at this stage is that there's now an agreement to work together. And indeed, one SALGA, of course, with the exception that they'll continue to use the Kwalo Constitution until 2011. The question of how you address all matters that the AG has not had an opportunity to have access to, it's a matter that arises post this financial year. I don't think much can go into details about what is there or not there. All we can say is that there's commitment now to normalize the situation.
Does that mean also that they'll open their books up to AG for the current financial year and the one after?
Yeah, let me clarify first. The 4 million I mentioned is before the not the breakdown, before the misunderstanding. Before the misunderstanding of administration.
Yes.
So we had already 4 million that was directly paid by the member municipality. But since April, when the misunderstanding, everything was paid in the account of one along.
Yes.
The issue of the AG currently, there's an agreement that the AG can now go and audit the books of KZN.
No, thanks very much, Chairperson. I wanted to clarify that issue of saying before that misunderstanding, 4 million was paid to National and 11 remained without. And 1.5 was above Dodge of Boko County. In this year, we have since received 13 million, but AG, Mr. Panzeli in the province. AG, Mr. Panzeli in the province is busy now for taking our books, just to align everything together. That's what I want to say, that no, we don't have to run away totally. Everything is under control and we are aligning everything. Our folks are being audited as we speak.
Yes, CEO.
No, okay, I'm not sure. We have the Auditor General present. If maybe you need to clarify or anything,
yes.
Just for the indication to members, he's also present.
Yeah, okay.
From the audit perspective, before you proceed, I normally ask even PMG people, who are you? But somehow I couldn't ask you today. I don't know who you are. I don't know what happened. Go ahead, then.
My apology, Chair. I should have also made myself more visible and mentioned my name here. The whole breakaway story, it's having a huge impact on the audit of SOLDA. I hear they're talking about 2011, where they will be separate. I'm not sure whether Kwanologa is a legitimate entity on their own. So I'm not sure what the audit outcome is going to be from Kwanologa's side. I'm not sure whether they followed the prescripts, whether they approached their treasury to get approval to open the bank account. As far as the current status is concerned, everything of Kwanologa belongs to SOLDA in terms of the agreement. So it was definitely a breakaway. They've opened their own bank accounts. They've accounted for their own income and expenditure. We haven't, from national, audit that expenditure or revenue. So it will still pose a problem as to how we're going to deal further with that. Most probably, I'm not sure, and I haven't seen the framework for the establishment of Kwanologa, but most probably, if there's no approval from the minister, all that money that they've received and paid out will be regarded as irregular expenditure. That is the worst scenario. So I'm not sure whether they follow those principles, but we'll have to look at that. I'm glad that they're saying that our provincial auditor is now in the process of auditing the books. The last time that I did speak to him, the financial statements have not yet been submitted to them. So I assume the financial statements have now been submitted and they've started with the audit. We'll just have to look at the outcome of that. Then we will have to look at the arrangement from the NEC for the approval to give Kwanologa approval to break away for this 2 years up to 2011, and we need to evaluate it. But it's going to have a severe impact on our audit. If this thing is not resolved by the end of this financial year, it's going to have another impact on the audit report of SOLDA. So from my side, I would urge the parties to resolve it as quick as possible, and take the necessary steps to clear it up. I think in our report we have also referred to the constitution of SOLDA, that where the members contravene the constitution, there should be action taken against those members. I'm not aware that action has been taken, and that is something that SOLDA should also consider to clear up those issues.
I, Chairperson, I think, as I said, there were two issues involved, politically and administration. But you said, let's put politics aside because it was not a matter of politics breakaway. It was an administration issue. Now I'm happy when it is a person say this word, because in terms of aligning the provinces and national, it was in a matter of MOU. And if you look at it, it's a matter of saying we have a right to be in and a right to be out. You cannot simply say we don't have a right to be out. We have that misunderstanding of a right to be in and a right to be out. So we just in MOU. That's why I said we won't talk
about it. Of course.
But I said we are peace aligning ourselves together.
Of course. He is raising it from how they look at it. And what I hear you saying effectively is that, yes, you'll find the document which we use to do what we are doing. That's what essentially you are saying. So let's look at that and see what the consequences of it are, what they mean effectively. But that's fine, because you're providing that there is documentation that will show where the misunderstanding started.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's fine.
Chairperson, and then, yeah.
Let me just add one little point that because of the possible confusion that may be created by this matter and other difficulties that may result from it, if not sorted out in time, we will invite the AG's office to the next National Executive Committee of SALAC, so that all the other outstanding type issues are properly addressed and understood.
Okay.
Thanks, Chairperson. On the question raised by Honorable Nkonyana, on page 129 as to the effectiveness of the audit committee, I would like to draw the attention of the members to page 129 under audit committee members and attendance. It indicated that the audit committee has met 5 times during the period under review. In terms of the PFMA, they have to meet at least quarterly. In terms of the charter that establishes them. So they have met 5 times. And out of those indications, the chairperson of the audit committee has attended all those 5 meetings. The other member of the committee, Ms. Matrua, has also attended 5 of those. The other member, Esma Vuso, has attended 4. So out of the 5 members, there has been a quorum of 3 members attending regularly 5 times at the meeting. The other new members that we are highlighting there are new members who have since replaced the outgone members that have since left in January. And this issue of effectiveness of the audit committee has also been certified by the Auditor General, and I would like to draw members' attention to page 135 of the report. In page 135 of the report, under the certification by AG of key governance responsibilities, I would like to draw members' attention to the bottom part of that page under internal audit, item 7. It says the public entity had an internal audit function in operation throughout the financial year, and it's indicated as yes by the auditor, and also it substantially fulfilled its responsibility for the year as set out in Treasury regulation. And it's also yes, the internal audit function operates in terms of an approach. So functionally, it has performed all of that. So it's only 2 members that have attended 1 out of that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you. That's just a follow-up. I understand, Chair. Thank you very much for that. But those that attended 5, there are only 2. That was my point. And not 3. Yes, you have clarified me that, of course, with the addition of Maila, at least some 4 meetings did correct there. But there was this one that I was having a question whether it corrected, whether we have got 2 people. But that is maybe I have no problem. But on the effectiveness of the internal control, on that same page 129, there is a remark by them there that significant weaknesses of control have been reported from the report issued by the internal audit function and management letters of the Auditor General. That paragraph. In the second paragraph also, internal audit completed only 6 of the 13 focus areas were identified and approved in the annual audit plan. So it was in that context. We don't know whether, in fact, all of them are actually working, but I think we have already said that in terms of their constitution, only 3 must be present, and not all of them.
Thanks, Chair. Through you. Indeed, as we reported in the last financial year and also at the beginning, we had capacity constraints in establishing an internal audit function. We did not have that. So at the very beginning, we assigned 13 tasks, and at the same time, we're establishing a new internal audit committee. So in reporting the achievement during the year, out of those 13, 5 tasks were executed. But we have since resolve the issue of the capacity. They have now been able to execute most of these functions. And as highlighted in the report of the chairperson, management is grappling and addressing all of these challenges.
Yeah.
So it was a reflection of capacity constraints in the 207-208. So members are 5 and 3 have been attending a fully chairperson. Thank you.
I think the I don't know whether the issue of the audit committee is finalized, so that I go to other issues. On the issue that was raised on a matter that relates to the 50-50, the 50% women representation. Let me just bring back to the house that the concept of 50-50 notion is a debate and initiative of SALGA and women in local government. Hence, it happened in all these elections. What we did, the question is that how do we then address, because they are political driven. At SALGA, we managed to launch it, and we managed to have several meetings with different political parties, all of them. We call all the political parties, IFP, DA, ANC, and we said, what is it that you think is going to be wrong to ensure that there is 50% representation in those elections?
Is there any order?
No. No, it's not an order. It's not safe me. Some reason that no. So all that, and SALGA was still maintaining that we'll go a mile again, because for quite a way that we're at least at 40 something. We're not yet at 50% both, either in local government or national provincial government. So we say from 30% we've made an achievement up to so far about this particular one. We're as well saying we're taking consideration of the conference that was held in Bloemfontein as one of the programs. That said, we are doing that. And then in that particular women's conference, we're as well saying we are going to establish what is called the Women's Commission, because we are now no longer championing women's issues in South Africa, but we are as well championing it in the continent. That what is this? This is the role of SALGA, organized local government in South Africa, and what impact can we do to organize local government in the continent? And we are playing a very good role. Hence, we've managed to establish this Women Gender Commission at the UCLG, which is the United Cities in Local Government of South Africa. For the first time, we initiated it, and it's happening. The current MEC for Agriculture, MEC Nandi Mayotula-Khoza, was our rep at the continent body, but wanted to develop the other one here so that from South Africa point of view, we would have a mandating forum that says what is it that we are going to push in the continent to ensure that women are not oppressed. So in Bloemfontein, we as well address the issue that there's a need, as was raised in the National Members Assembly in East London, that the Women's Commission must be formulated. So we'll continuously continue to champion SALGA and say to all political parties who want to say we are at this level. From ANC, you said you'll go 50-50, but we are not here. You are at this point. From DA, you are at this point. And from IFP, you're at this point. From UIF, you're at this point. And all those other IDU, you're at this point, and so forth. So what we do, we engage them personally. We call a women's meeting, and we develop a panel. So they must come and tell us, as political parties, what is it that, a role that they are playing to ensure that we reach a 50-50, a quota system. Sorry, Chairperson, but I'm just saying that this zebra system will SALGA, it's our vision, and want to see a zebra system implemented in the country. One woman, one man. No longer one man, one woman. But one woman, one man. We're not taking over. We are pushing for 50-50, and we want political parties. And we're still engaging them anyhow. We've launched it, and I think that is the issue. On the issue that of the press.
A quick follow-up. We appreciate the effort that you put on gender mainstreaming and women presentation, but my focus was on you answered me on how are you engaging a party, but the only thing that maybe can make you engage them more is to change their constitution. For an example, DA constitution doesn't speak on gender representation. So to them it means nothing. It's a futile exercise to discuss with DA, having their DA constitution talking about a good constitution at DA, they are talking about incompetence, not women. So they must work towards changing the party's constitution so that you could be able to reach this.
Thank you very much.
Honorable Tangeta was set fire to the meeting.
No, it's not possible for us to. We are lobby. We are paying at both KC Rail and lobbying political parties.
Yeah.
But what we have to do, we'll move forward to push.
Yeah.
As organized.
The end result might be what he says.
Yeah. As Kalga Women's Forum and Commission, we are going to push Kofta and Kofta to either amend the Electoral Act
okay.
and show that there is 50-50 representation in the Electoral Act. That is the rule that is. Sorry? So if we go that route, we know that it will be a compulsory. But for now, we are at the mercy of the political parties, and we are calling even those that are here to please make sure there is 50-50 representation.
Can I comment?
No, I agree with you.
So there's something that I want to say, which I don't say my member from the Northwest. She has been mentioning political parties, but she doesn't mention others like mine. And she knows she's from there.
So it's a very good approach.
It's not going to be compulsory. The way they are doing it.
Thank you for that.
You can't blame her because you yourself have not mentioned it. So don't worry. You had an opportunity, ma.
Chairperson, on the issue of the provincialization of the health issue, we're looking into the issues that relate to issues that, for instance, you look to Johannesburg Metro. They are currently, if you look into the powers and functions, they are currently dealing with the metro. And we're saying they've got capacity. And we're looking into a bigger picture. There's a capacity. There's currently debate that the discussing issue of the regional province, where they want to merge all the metros there and do it one. So we're saying because of they've already doing it, they've got the capacity, we're saying those category 6, they can do it, but those that without capacity.
Yes, can I just say this to you, with your permission, Salga, General. I think you need to be a lot more assertive than that. Because you see, the capacity is not, municipalities are not born with it, even provincial or national departments. Strategies are adopted which are financed to build that capacity. So, if we keep saying only those with capacity, we must take more proactive steps and say, for example, all metros, it's an obligation that must go there. There must be no question about whether they have capacity or not. It must be built so that resources are made for them to be able to handle it, because it makes better sense, both administratively and politically, to handle housing at that level. Or at least this is my personal view. But I also find it difficult that even in some... they are now no longer just aspirants. They have been declared metros by the demarcation board. All of those municipalities, that specific steps must be taken with deadlines, that they must have that capacity within time frames so that issue can be handled. Now, you put it very gently, nicely. I don't know why you're so nice. I don't know. This is why you are ignored, in my opinion. Yeah. So, yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Just a follow-up, Chairperson, to be saying that if you go that route,
yes,
we'll be forever not having...
capacity in rural.
Yes.
And this is historical. Mm-hmm. It has been there, mm-hmm. and all those who have the previously disadvantaged will be disadvantaged. And another thing with health, if I cannot have what the Gauteng is having, I will move from Gauteng to come to move from Mabatu to come to Gauteng, where health it is. Now we are saying, can we start having centers of excellence even there as a pilot project, so that at the end of the day we come next to. At the end of the day, Gauteng is really forever going forward, while others are breaking behind.
The principle is
to avoid ossifying the current problematic poverty pockets in the country. We must take proactive steps with definite certainty to create the balance, so to speak. All right, let's proceed. We've been interrupting you as you tried to respond to the questions. Let's stop that. Do it quickly so that I have a set of questions that you want to ask, please. Yeah.
Chairperson, on the issue that we quite agree, the route that we say we have to go as one, especially after the Matu case. It's a principle that we agree, that we want to see capacity as well in all areas of rural. Actually, it's come to a push. If this country was having more resources, will not have any rural area. We'll be very pleased as an organized local government. Chairperson, what on the issue that relates to the issue that relates to the capacity in terms of the I think there was a matter of how do we monitor capacity and how do we get feedback from local governments. On the programs that we know that we're partnering with CETA, we even on the graduation take part and participate. But mainly all some of the major programs that we're currently running in a partnership, it's programs that are intended to improve municipal financial viability and sustainability and management. And if you look from the Auditor General point of view, on the last report, there is quite indications of quite improvement from a number of municipalities. And we're quite believing that it then says that the course that we're currently taking with Best University and UCJ and Tekes, as well as in Western Cape, they are currently in Eastern Cape, they are currently making wonders because they are emphasizing on politicians to start playing a more major oversight role on the finances, looking to issues of non-compliance, time frames and so forth in terms of MFMA, as well as officials to know what is it that they have to do and how should they their relation with the AG's office, the constitutional mandate to pay AG's fees and a number of issues. So I think if you look from the background point of view of the AG's report, it's going to show you that there's a slight improvement in a number of municipalities, even if there's another slight drop in the others, but the others are still stagnant. But that's how we're saying from the finance point of view. But nonetheless, we as well monitoring by operating with the Swiss National Treasury. We've got what is called the District Area Forum, where we're monitoring whether whatever people have been trained are practicable. I think Tony Le George, you can add on that. You can add on how we monitor as well. Our provinces as well are playing a role in terms of ensuring that there is impact. But since we have indicated that in the last elections we have lost tremendously our strong pillars of local government, most of councillors that we have capacitated are now in provinces and they are now in national government. A gap has been opened again. So it's a cycle that says we capacitate and from there a gap is open. So it's something that says to us we as well going to stay the will again to ensure that we capacitate the other leg in the other layer. Thank you very much.
The others are at their
just to say that the other issues that were raised, but these were more contributions than questions. The question of the impact of salary increases on the budget of municipalities, I mean, the strain is really heavy. So I agree with your observation. On the question of...
if I may, I mean, if Salvi agrees that it has a heavy strain on the finances, the question is what sort of interaction with Treasury takes place in order to mitigate that in the appropriations that, you know, follow the supplementary appropriations?
I mean, we had a budget forum recently, about a month ago, and we raised this question. The matter was raised in an ongoing way. But what I'm saying is that I'm acknowledging that it's definitely a strain on the budgets of municipalities. So I agree with you there. On the question of jobs are number one priority, whether in Cape Town or in Venda, Umhlabelingana, and so on. So the issue is a big concern for all of us, and we agree again that municipalities can play a very key role, whether through the PTA programs and so on and so forth. It remains key. The last issue is the question of the signing of MOU, memorandum of understanding between SALGA and traditional leaders. Very, very key and important point. We are now looking at, because MOU has already been signed, we are now looking at the question of implementation. And our view is that indeed we should move in the direction of ensuring that the strong partnership that is built between traditional leaders on one hand, councillors on the other, as well as local communities. Because in any way, our view and understanding is that, if you are a councillor in a local area, we are a subject of the chief, like everybody else. So there's no need for competition. What we should try and do is to cooperate and collaborate and work together.
The issue of what competition?
Follow up question.
Thank you, Chairperson. What I'd like to raise is on page 218 and 219 in the report. I'd like to just comment on the fact that the training went down from 2.6 million down to 900,000, and consultants' fees went up from 9.8 million to 12 million rand. Now, I just want to know what measures are put in place for you to capacitate yourself so that you don't have to spend so much money on consultants. Thank you.
The agency. Let me, before, I think Tony Lane, the CFO, will address the issue of the consultant fees and so forth, and the reduction in training. On the issue of the ward committees, want to agree that throughout the country there's been a number of challenges of the, if it's not the minimum communication with communities, there is pure communication. Because there's reasons that you train ward committees, but tomorrow, because they're on voluntary term, they leave, they work, they migrate, and ward committee system becomes non-functional. But we're working on a program to say ward councillors must make sure that we've got strong, functional ward committees, hence the COPTA in terms of the grants system that says we must make sure that the stipends and a number of issues, a support program for what committees by COCTA in terms of executive chairs and the stage. We want to agree that the monitoring of how what committees function is done through the offices of the speakers for the country in all municipalities. That the speakers will on a monthly or quarterly basis submit a report to say whether there is functionality of board committees or non-functionality of board committees.
It's more the functionality of your training. The question was, do you follow up on your training to ascertain whether it's effective or not? So that's really what I'm trying to get a sense of. You train 350 members. How many of them a year later do you feel you're happy they're implementing what you're doing?
What I was raised is that the training that we're doing in partnership with GTZ and COPTA. So those are training. But we will check how effectively they work. But I was still saying that even if you train what committee, because it's a voluntary issue, I can train my goalie as a what committee today. Tomorrow, Goalie has been employed in Eastern Cape, and he leaves. So it impacts on whatever we're trying to do better because of some of the realities in the ground that our water quality system is on voluntary base. And most of the, majority of the people there are unemployed because they have to do the door-to-doors and home-based care and so forth. So once they get a job, they go. That particular training is gone. It's no longer effective. So I'm trying to answer in that question.
Just to emphasize that one of the problems with training is that there are many institutions that come about that come forward and indicate their willingness to make a contribution. But training being a very soft type delivery suffers sometimes from lack of proper standards and quality. As the need to ensure proper accreditation, centralization, and so on. So it remains one of the key areas where significant improvement can be made. Not, of course, been saying that the fact that some good work has already been done, but we need to take it to a higher level.
Thanks, Chair. There are three outstanding issues, the ESCOM issue and also the actual program of traditional leaders to add to what the Chairperson has raised. I would like to address the issue raised by the Honourable Member in page 219 of the training coming down versus the other previous year. Part of capacitation of SALGA of organizational reviewers, we undertook a highly intensive training program as an intervention to expose staff. They had individual learning plans to give them specific areas of support to jack up capacity. You'll find that in the next year, then it comes to lesser because we have now capacitated by also recruiting key people. Around professional and consulting fees, three cost drivers there are mainly responsible for that. But they are cost drivers on a declining curve. The AG fees remain largely high for us. We are coming from a past where there has been a lot of work for AG to do to prepare our financial statements for the last 4 years. So those have been major cost drivers for us, ranging in the 3.5 million, 4.25 fees, 5 million. But we think we'll be able to engage with them now that we have cleared significant, quite a lot of issues. We think there's scope for us to receive a much more better consideration around the fee structure on the time it takes to audit. The other major cost driver was part of us putting together the asset register and the verification of assets. Over the last four financial years prior to 2007, the major concern of AG to give us disclaimer was assets, inability to express confidence in our assets. So we had to make that intervention in 2008, and we have now sorted out, hence the issue of positive clearance by AG. And we also undertook an institutional review for SALGA, and that was also a once-off major cost in 2008. It's not envisaged to go forward in 2009 and 2010. We have now established the full capacity. I will ask my colleague Lance to respond on the ESCOM clarification, as well as that program of the House of Traditionalism.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, on the ESCOM issue that has been raised by Honourable Smith, it is really, if you look at the two slides on page 37, the top one merely unpacks what are the possible impacts on municipalities. In the first bullet point on the top slide, we are saying yes. The immediate thinking would be if the prices go up, the windfall for municipalities increases with the 10% that is provided. But on the next slide, we say that would be a challenge. While municipalities will on the face of it, think that there is now a scope for them to now increase the salary, well, the electricity income. We are saying on slide 2, it might not be feasible at all, because the very same customer you are intending to with the increase with ESCOM at the 10%, essentially will not be able to pay you, and therefore immediately will have a challenge from a revenue point of view. So once we, on the top slide we highlight the possible impact, but on the next slide just below it we are saying no. Whilst we're saying it might be an impact and then there might be scope for revenue, we are saying it will present each municipality with that particular challenge. So I hope I've answered your question. The second part, Chairperson, is on the relationship between SALGA and the National House of Traditional Leaders. Yes, the Chairperson has also outlined that there has been that MOU that has been entered into. We move into the next step, which is an implementation plan. And the implementation plan itself has a number of interventions. Key amongst those are training that is necessary for traditional leadership. Secondly, it is the role that traditional leadership should be playing within a number of programs within municipalities, ranging from IDPs, their participation in that particular process. Secondly, their participation in reducing poverty, their participation around programs that relate to services that are provided by those very communities that they are heading from a traditional point of view. So the implementation plan is quite detailed and deals with a number of key interventions, and I think some of them have been alluded to. We will also make sure that going forward, Chairperson, we will provide the committee with a package of a number of documentation that we have developed itself, which could also assist the committee in its own engagements on issues as and when they arrive at this committee. Thanks, Chair.
They were talking about your employee cost going up 28% in the light of any 10% revenue increase, and then this whole thing about eradicating backlogs in 2011 with some special package.
Thank you, Chairperson. In the presentation, it was alluded to that they wanted to define the IDPs to reflect the new priorities. Now, I'm not sure what that meant exactly, but IDPs are supposed to come from the ground up, not from the up-down enforced on them. So I'd just like some clarity on what that statement actually means. Does it mean that SALGA is going to influence IDPs in order to fit in with the new priorities? Surely the priority should fit in with the IDPs. Thank you.
No, just in general, Jefferson, that the development is not just one dimension. Yes, there is an IDP process which is down up. Bottom up, if you like, and the prioritization and all that goes with it. But all of us know here, sitting in this room here, that development also is top down.
that there are certain interventions that get made from time to time by those who have a vantage point, who can see a bit further. And that's why we have so much progress in the world. This is not to say people don't have a role. This is just to emphasize that there's also such a thing as top-down approach.
Thank you very much. Just to enhance further that point the chair has raised, I think the actual context was exactly as the chair says, reflecting national-led priorities and reflecting municipal-led priorities. Remember from 2006, 1 March, we had a local government priority program defining the term 2006-2011. What are the key priorities for local government and so on. And we now have the 2009-2014 medium-term strategic framework. You've got to align those and make sure municipalities in their IDPs are reflective of the national priorities that must be translated on the ground and so on. So it's more of that kind of enhancement. On the issue of capacity of increasing by 26%, it's really what I raised earlier on, the institutionalization of the capacity within SALGA during the year under review, recruitment of personnel at a higher level to make sure that core portfolios that reflect core mandates of local government we have full capacity on, and we have since done that. So it will then be managed from that growing rate marginally going forward. So it was an institutional capacitation intervention that has reflected on that. On the 2011, that statement was made in the context of the local government turnaround strategy, to say that as we have MDGs that have specific targets, 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012, up to 2014, there is a need for an increased and faster pace of meeting those backlogs, because they also grow at a rate sometimes higher than your delivery rate. So one of the key issues that was raised in the local government turnaround strategy is that a battery of measures needs to be put in place. Financial intervention, governance intervention, institutional stroke capacity support to make sure that we can jack up the capacity to be able to meet the pace of the requirements. So it's made in that context. Thank you.
Chair, overall, I also want to just come with a point that in our oversight, I mean, we really feel that SALGA must give value for money. And it's not so much a question, but, well, perhaps I can frame it in a question by saying we have economic problems in the country. We have challenges at local government. You are extracting 100 million rand from the municipalities as levies, and then you also get from the department. So we must look at value for money. Now, what I'm just worried about is, on the one hand, it's good to appoint personnel, but I'm worried that you become top-heavy. I was used that local that SALGA made use of the capacity within local government. You have at municipality somebody who is an expert on electricity supply. And those people render their service to SALGA to benefit the whole sphere. So I'm saying there's another way of approaching things. Conferences, the last conference, thank you very much for being open about it, cost over 7 million rand in East London. That's a lot of money. Your international relations, it is a good thing, but we must always keep in check what we spend on it. I see your meetings, and I've got no problem with that. You're meeting every second month. And it states here very clearly that you are not remunerated for the office that you occupy. So what I'm just driving at is that we have difficult times financially, and SALGA must take that into account, and there are different ways of doing things so that we still have value for money. My second issue is just on the pension fund. You had two appointees there, and really the administrators of the pension fund went overboard. And you had two members there which should have been called to order. I take off my hat to Mayor Hubert Malaba, Mashlaba, Baba, Malaba, who resigned. I mean, I got the impression he couldn't go along with the way that they are going on there with exorbitant fees. I think they've paid them, it come now out of a document, 2,700 rand per day if they meet as a fee. Yeah, trustee. What I just wanted to say is that on this, there's a lot of things going on from all local government, you know, members from all parties. They are very dissatisfied, and I think that you should be very assertive on the way that they deal with the pension fund. And Chairperson, I've wrote Salga a letter, and I requested them, please appoint from the IFP and the DA also members as trustees. I myself and the Honourable Smith, we serve on the Parliamentary Pension Fund. And the moment you have a multi-party trustees, you get much more credibility. I also wrote to the pension fund. They wrote me a lawyer's letter back that well, they don't want to do it on political basis. From Salga, I haven't had a reply. I haven't had a reply from you. But those are things that we have to look if we want to get the pension fund back on its track. And then the last issue just is, really, I think the viability of municipalities are at stake, and Salga must play a very important role here. We have the increase in the salaries of officials. We have this ESCOM demand. We have council salaries where there are new demands. So I would just like to call on Salga that when they make the inputs, you've got the broad view that you really take into account the viability of municipalities, because I'm very worried that the whole system will be very challenged because of this. Thank you very much, Jay.
The partners of the LER.
Yes.
The president.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Just to say that we agree with a member of parliament. Value for money is what we should always strive for. We are doing our best. We may not be too loud about it. The conference that you're speaking about that took place in East London, not a cent of Salga money went into that conference. That conference was financed by money that we raised ourselves from the private sector. Oh, not a cent from any of the municipalities. In relation to utilizing staff and other personnel from municipality, utilizing already existing skills, I'd just like to say that I agree with the member again fully. If you look at here in the Manj, hands-on type approach adopted by government, you realize that many of the people who actually participated in the program to assist many of the municipalities actually came from the municipalities themselves. I know that in Johannesburg we had to make available two key persons to go to do some of the work that needed to be done and so on. There's a very beautiful park that is being created in Mtata in the Eastern Cape. Johannesburg City Park is involved in that initiative. So we support the idea, but we should also try as we can to get as many of the municipalities in the country to do a similar kind of thing. Because indeed, I mean, there's a lot of capacity and best practice within our own municipalities. And if we work together, there's just so much more that can be achieved. On the question of the pension fund, I don't want to make this point. You know, sometimes in these big meetings of Salga and so on, people even howl when you raise it. But it's very important to have the understanding that Salga is not the pension fund. And it has no intention of becoming the pension fund.
But because our members are affected by whatever is happening, in the pension fund, and so on, SALGA is forced to play a role. And our role today has really been to try and change the rules, or matter of the rules of the pension fund, and to allow for participation of members. You know, some of these pension funds are run in a very funny manner. There's no voice and no participation from members. Now we're changing that and pushing that members must have a voice. They must be heard. Firstly. Secondly, there is a meeting that we have organized that we've pushed for, and that has now been supported by all the role players for the pension fund to look at all its affairs and to take whatever decision it wants to take. The meeting is taking place. It was supposed to be on the 30th of October. Colin can just clarify when it's actually taking place. But we're pushing very hard that such a meeting is set to take place, and indeed that members must have a voice. So they correct all of these things that we're talking about. But SARA is not a pension fund. But we have a role to play, but it's very important to understand that we are not the pension fund.
Chairperson, I just want to concur with what the chair just raised on the issue of the value of money. I just want to say we're practicing it. We're using internal and extended technical expertise from our member municipalities. But we indeed need a champion who will facilitate and coordinate it, so that when the issues that have to be raised, either in IGR structure, that person is available. But the advices and how we champion and work on the documentation is precisely because of input from either KZN. Let's say I'm giving finance from finance point of view. You'll take Kishkuma and KZN and the other municipalities. And this is a team that look into how we strengthen issues that relate to matters that affect SALGA or municipal finances, either from IGR point of view, whether the budget forum or what tax system we want to introduce. We utilize that particular issue because SALGA issues need really full-time people so that we can make and be really the voice of member municipalities. I just wanted to add on that one. On the issue that relates to the issues of us on the cost measures because of the economic crunch that we're having, we've agreed that there's no employee of SALGA who will fly business class. They're all going to economic class. Doesn't matter whether it's international or whether it's local or it's domestic. We as well spoken on the issue of catering, that no more catering for internal meetings unless if there's a minister or minister from Zambia who has attended to SALGA as external people, then that's where we're going to exercise our hospitality. The issues of printing, we're putting strict measures, listing of rental, we've as well put strict measures, reduction in newspaper subscriptions, because it costs a lot. So there's a number of areas that we say we as well want to realize some savings so that we can do issues that relate to value for money. I think Chairperson, I just wanted to say as SALGA, Chairperson, allow me to say this. As SALGA, we don't operate on a political party basis. We see ourselves as an organization of member municipalities. We, at our midst before the premier of Western Cape becomes the premier, was co-opted to be a member of the NEC. Not because he's from another political party, because we saw potential in that member municipality and the leader to come and sharpen local government issues throughout the country. So we don't discuss political parties there, but discuss development in local government, and what is it that is the role that we play as organizers?
We've got time constraints. And on your table, Stark. In fact, let me put it this way. Chairperson, this is precisely where Salga has progress, at least in the minds of some people. What you said earlier, that often you are not too loud in the things you are doing and doing correctly. You see, Stofile, Honorable Stofile here, Arnold Stofile, when he was premier in the Eastern Cape, he was told by a peasant that, you see, you don't. You act like a fish that lays thousand eggs, and then of course you keep quiet about it. Nobody knows about it. See, Stofile, you must learn from a hen which lays only one egg, and the whole village knows. That's an argument for a constant, prompt communication of issues that are strategic. One of them has been raised about the policy positions that we have adopted. And members of this committee don't have them. Okay, I'm putting it in quotes, don't have them. Now, that's your starting point. If you, as you, in the annual report, you identify Parliament as your stakeholder, that's who you give that material to.
Okay.
And that's where my question was going to come, whether your, I wanted to look at your website before I came here and to ask you to comment on how do you think it is. Is it responsive enough? Is it updated efficiently and so on? And also, broadly speaking, ICT's state of affairs in municipalities. Do you have a report about that? Just an indicator of where things are, where they are going to, and so on. On the policy positions that we're talking about, the evaluation of powers and functions, the policy on provinces that Cap talk about. It would appear that, as I said in one of the meetings, that we need a more proactive, bold assertion by SALGA about issues it feels certain about from its experience as a voice of local government that can be best there if this legislation gives to municipalities the following things, takes away from provinces and our national departments the following issues and places that yes. And be controversial if we must be controversial, so that we are able to know if we disagree with you, we will tell you so. If we agree with you, we will do so. But we do want, at least speaking from where I'm sitting, I do wish to get a little more fire than I'm getting from Salga. We have a problem of performance in education as a problem, the performance of learners and students and so on, including on the sporting field and so on. And I want to repeat this because I've said it before. We went to Cuba some years back as a Free State to look at their, Cuba got an award by some Switzerland-based organization, international organization in agriculture, for having been the best urban agriculture practitioner as a country. So, taking from people who migrated from the rural areas to the urban areas, who have interesting animal husbandry, for example, as well as other agricultural practices. So they were saying that our view is that kids at early childhood facilities must eat well, okay, so that they perform well throughout society, educationally and in the sporting field. And municipalities have a responsibility to provide childcare facilities. That's one of their responsibilities. But quite frankly, I have never once heard an association in the provinces or Sangha National itself speaking on this matter and the state of affairs there. So early childhood in the country, for example, as a problem issue, the childcare facilities will be part of that. And my sense is that we really need to, if we have our sights in the long term, that's one area that we should really can make a huge difference.
in our communities and so on. So perhaps we need to persuade municipalities to raise that as a priority in how they manage these things. I want to just say that it occurs to me also that, and learning and looking at other associations like yourselves, which have strong research, monitoring and evaluation capacity to be able to play the roles you have identified. So in the absence of, so that you become the reference point for anything that relates to local government and municipalities in the country. So if your research and development investment, now, and I use this word in quotes, meaning the amount of time, the amount of energy you put into developing this research and development capacity undermines your ability to perform all the roles you have mentioned, being a voice, being a, and so on, so that we can refer to you on a range of these issues. I do want to check where you are at with those issues, but I want to ask you to respond to them now, because you have invited us to a lunch at the ICC. President Hotel
at Bandrup Bay.
I know where. Yes. So that's where we will go to. And
it's Proti President Hotel. Proti President Hotel.
Yeah, Proti President Hotel. Yeah. Okay. Who has got shares there from Salga? Because I remember I went there to a Salga function one evening there. So yeah, the city's network. Yes. No, they will answer that. Let me first just wrap this little piece up. The issues that we have raised about the, and the reports we have received from you about the disclaimer that you have received from, as a result of what you say is KZN and so on, we would like you at the earliest opportunity to report back to the committee. Firstly, in writing, and then as a follow-up, to come to the committee to talk to us about it. Preferably in the delegation as you have here. So the delegation from KZN, that it must include your leadership from there as well. You must come back, because you've been here before. Both administrative, as you've done, and political as well. We do want to feel a degree of comfort that this matter is not going to happen again in terms of the management of this thing. Of course, we can always hope and so on. Your annual report has a very useful address directly at its back. So I assume you wanted us to keep it for as long as we can. Okay. Thank you for that. It's a very useful information material that we have. It helps us, members, to be able to contact those municipalities from wherever you are, any which way possible. Thank you very much for that. So we appreciated this input, and we hope that we can come back to it. I'm not able to give you to propose time frames and ask you to propose time frames. But I hope that it might be appropriate. Yeah, that's one possibility to give us an indication, and if we can convene a meeting, do so, to come and hear your feedback from that one. Members? Yes, Ndati. Then we are finalizing this meeting here. You wanted to say something?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Chairperson. In terms of logistics, if there are honorable members who might be having a transport challenge, we have arranged transport for those members to take them to the hotel.
if they would need any form of assistance.
How long do you expect this to take place?
As soon as we leave, this gentleman, Johan, can lead them to the transport. We have budgeted to finish the function from 1:30 at least until 3:30.
Okay. Any other comments?
We have a plan area two.
Okay, that's fine. We'll come back.
Yeah.